Welcome to UBC On Tap, a CITR public affairs program heard weekly at this time. UBC On Tap dispenses information and knowledge, tapped from the University of British Columbia, for community consumption. Today's show features UBC Commerce Professor Dennis Capoza providing a healthy source of information on the Vancouver housing market. Here's your host for UBC On Tap, Anne Fenn.
The Vancouver housing market often seems no more predictable than the city's weather. As one of the most volatile real estate markets in Canada, any method of forecasting and understanding the market is valuable to homeowners, potential buyers, tenants, and developers alike. Dennis Capoza, professor of commerce here at UBC, has been involved in a number of different projects aimed at understanding the real estate market and has recently been helping to develop a mortgage renewal insurance program for the federal government. Professor Capoza has developed a computer program model of the Vancouver housing market, which has been quite successful in predicting market trends over the past year. Professor Capoza explains his model.
Well, it's a short-run forecasting model based upon economic variables, and what we try to do is estimate what future sales are going to be and what future listings are going to be. The economic variables that we have found have the most influence on the housing market are things like the interest rate, clearly, and real housing prices. That's housing prices adjusted for the rate of inflation. And migration is an important variable, migration into and out of BC, and a couple other variables that enter are unemployment and the level of income in the city.
Is it applicable only to the housing market?
No, the theory that it's based on is very general, and in fact, the approach that I've taken is very similar to what's usually done in the labor market for trying to understand unemployment. This is the first application to the housing market that I know of that type of theory.
Is your model workable only for Vancouver, or are the variables used common to other Canadian cities?
No, there's nothing unique in it about Vancouver. It's using basic economic variables, and the same data could be gathered for any other city. It tends to work quite well in Vancouver because Vancouver's had very volatile housing prices in the last few years. But the theory and the data are available for any city, although this is the only place where it's been done that I know of.
There have been a number of criticisms about the BC Place housing project. What will be the effects of high-cost housing area to the surrounding low-cost housing districts, Chinatown in particular?
Well, of course, the model doesn't tell us anything about that, but I think any major development you can anticipate having a significant impact on the surrounding area. If the housing in BC Place is high-income housing, then normally you should expect some spillover and upgrading in the surrounding area, and some neighborhood change. I think you should be able to should predict some neighborhood change in the surrounding area. That would be normal with any major development.
How do you feel about rent control? Is it detrimental or advantageous to a city?
Well, in the case of any city, any economist is opposed to rent controls because it defeats the price mechanism. But in Vancouver, they've been particularly detrimental from the point of view of the housing market. One of the reasons why housing prices ran up so drastically in 1980 was because of rent controls. Normally, the housing market requires some vacancies so that it can adjust to surges in demand. But because of rent controls, no one had built any housing for quite a while in Vancouver back in 1979 and 1980. As a result, when a surge in demand did hit, in the form of migration into BC primarily from Alberta and Ontario. When that influx of people did hit Vancouver, there was no place for them to live. There were no vacancies available. And as a result, all of the burden of adjustment was placed on prices rather than on quantities or vacancies, which would be the normal mechanism. And so as a result, we had this big bubble in housing prices in Vancouver with a big run-up in prices and then a big collapse as the supply caught up to the demand. So they've been very harmful in Vancouver from the point of view of the fluctuations in housing prices.
Well, can you explain how rent control actually prevents people from building?
As soon as rent controls are imposed, a number of things happen. Initially, there's very little impact on the housing market. Rent controls, since if you start off with supply and demand in rough balance, then imposing rent controls at the existing price results in very little impact on the market. The trouble is that we've been living in inflationary times, and the tendency has been for prices in general to go up faster than the adjustment allowed by the rentalsmen. And so as a result, the actual price being charged on apartments gets out of whack with what should be charged. And when that happens, there's more demand than there is supply, and all of the vacancies disappear. And it creates a very tight market. It has a number of secondary consequences. With a very low vacancy rate, it becomes very difficult to find an apartment. So people who are moving into the city or who are changing locations within the city or changing jobs find it much more difficult to find an apartment and have to search that much longer. They might have to read the newspaper very, very closely every night and engage in all sorts of extra activities which increase the cost to them. Now, clearly, the people who are living in apartments which they don't move out of benefit to some extent, but there are substantial groups of substantial groups of people elsewhere in the economy who lose out because of it and whose voice doesn't get heard. And that's why economists are opposed to it. The costs are there, and it becomes a redistribution that's very perverse. Not all people living in rent-controlled apartments are necessarily in need of a subsidy, and it would be much better to give only those who need a subsidy a grant rather than give it to everybody who lives in an apartment. A lot of apartments are quite expensive and occupied by high-income individuals.
Is the trend in Vancouver generally towards more apartments or houses?
Well, the short-run trend has been towards more apartments because of the changes in federal legislation. The fact that the federal government did away with MURBs, multiple unit residential buildings, in the November 1981 budget, I guess it was, caused a lot more housing starts of apartments in late 1981 and early 1982, and as a result there's been an increase in the apartment supply. But long run, I think the trend is going to continue towards more owner-occupied housing for a couple of reasons. One is because people are more likely to own a house as their income goes up, and incomes are still increasing irregularly, but they're still increasing. And the second reason is because of the demographics. There's the big bulge in population right now is among the 25 to 35-year-olds, the post-war baby boom. And over the next few years, over the next 10 years, they're going to be moving from 25 to 35-year-olds to 35 to 45-year-olds. And 35 to 45-year-olds are much more likely to own a house than 25 to 35-year-olds. So I would expect the trend towards more home ownership to continue, but there are a few factors that are militating against it. One of them is the very high interest rates is choking off a bit of home ownership and preventing some people from buying. But with interest rates falling, we should have a resumption of the upward trend.
How do you foresee the future of exclusive areas protected by special zoning laws to prevent growth?
Well, exclusive areas usually have considerable political influence, and so I don't see much change in that. The people in Shaughnessy have been able to protect Shaughnessy, and I suspect that'll continue. They're influential people, and it's not just true of Shaughnessy, just about every area. It's been very, very difficult for any area, not just exclusive area, to change because the residents always form homeowner associations and oppose any kind of change, even if it's beneficial, even if it's just a matter of putting in a traffic signal or rerouting the streets or any kind of zoning change or traffic change, there's always opposition to it, and it's almost impossible to get them done nowadays, unfortunately.
Is there any way of increasing housing starts in the city?
Well, from the point of view of the municipal government, there's relatively little that they can do. The sorts of things that they have available to them that would be reasonable from a fiscal point of view would be primarily to make it easier to get permits or to release some of the land that the city has or subdivide some of the land. Now, the city does have a little bit of land that can be subdivided into lots that could be auctioned off or sold off, and you could get some housing starts that way. But in terms of subsidizing major apartment projects, that's probably too costly a thing for the municipal government to do, and probably undesirable from a local government standpoint. It's probably best left for the federal government to engage in that type of activity. So there's not too much that they can do short of subsidizing apartment projects, but I don't think it's an advisable policy from the point of view of the local government.
How will Expo 86 affect the housing market?
Well, I think in the short run, of course, we should see a big influx of tourists into the area. And that should, and also the activity associated with it, should draw some people into the city. So in the short run, we may get a bit of a tight market, similar to what happened in Montreal during the Olympics. But in the long run, I don't think it will have too much impact on Vancouver.
Are certain areas more affected by fluctuating housing prices than others?
Well, certain cities are. Vancouver is probably the worst in terms of fluctuating housing prices that I have seen. Most cities are much more stable than Vancouver. Now, Vancouver has gone through two or three of very nasty cycles, and I think it's likely to continue, given the nature of the underlying economy and the nature of the housing market. The last cycle, this one that we've just gone through in 1881, is probably one of the worst, and it was aggravated by a number of special circumstances, including the rent controls that we mentioned earlier, and the agricultural land preserves also limited the supply of housing at the same time. I think there's better awareness in the government nowadays that they need to be careful about these sorts of programs. And in fact, they appear to be phasing out rent controls. And I think there's less rigidity on the agricultural land preserve. So in the future, we may see a little bit less fluctuation in housing prices in Vancouver, but it's still a very volatile city and among cities in Canada and among cities in North America.
Why is it so volatile?
Well, the underlying economy is resource-based. It's very heavily dependent upon lumber and on mining. And lumber, in particular, goes through very violent cycles. It's heavily dependent upon housing starts, particularly housing starts in the U.S. And housing starts in the U.S. fluctuate by a factor of two over the business cycle. They'll double in an upswing and they'll halve in a downswing. Right now they're running about 1 million. They were as low as 800,000 in the U.S. And at the peak they were over 2 million. So there's very violent swings in the lumber and mining industries, and as a result there are very violent swings in the rate of household formation in Vancouver. When there's a good upswing, there's a lot of people coming into Vancouver and a big demand for housing and a big demand for housing starts. When there's a downswing, those people are not coming to Vancouver and there tends to be a surplus of housing. I don't think that aspect of the Vancouver economy is going to change. It's very resource-based and very volatile. Any area that has an economy that's very sensitive to the business cycle, there are areas that are not very sensitive. For example, Ottawa is very insensitive to the business cycle because it's mostly government workers, and government workers don't lose their jobs during recessions. They generally have relatively secure jobs, and so you don't find the swings in the housing market in Ottawa that you would find in Vancouver. In fact, during this recession, the housing market in Ottawa has done very well. There's been very, very little change in prices in Ottawa.
Well, what about certain areas in the city? Is low rent or high rent more affected by housing price swings?
Yes, as it turns out, and I haven't checked this analytically, but it's my impression from looking at the data that high-income housing tends to be much more volatile than low-income housing. Or high-priced houses are more volatile. And the reason for this is because people with high incomes generally have high incomes because they're earning profits. They own a small business, or they own stocks, or some other form of capital wealth. And profits are much more heavily influenced by the business cycle than wage income. There's a common misconception that recessions hurt low-income individuals more than high-income individuals. And if you, it depends on how you measure that. If you measure that in terms of percentage change in income, the percentage change in income of high-income individuals is much more heavily influenced than low-income individuals. And as a result, during a recession, high-income individuals don't buy houses. They're going broke. In the current recession, an awful lot of small businesses are in distress. And so what I'm noticing in the data is that the high-income areas have lagged behind the rest of the market. The first areas to see the upswing were areas like Vancouver East. And the lagging behind are areas like West Vancouver, which has a lot more high-income housing.
So what's your prediction for the next 6 months in Vancouver?
Well, what the model is predicting right now is a upturn in housing prices over the next 6 months. The worst is over, according to the model. Presumably, August has been was the low point, and prices should rise a little bit faster than the rate of inflation for a few months, and then at the rate of inflation subsequently.
My guest today was Dennis Capoza, Professor of Commerce here at UBC. My production assistant, without a doubt, was Harry Hercheng. This is Anne Fenn for UBC On Tap.